Already been such a wonderful morning. It's great to have Eli Kahn back. If you want to know what kind of music I like groove to, that is my jam. His stuff is so good. He, as a matter of fact, I think both of the albums he has over there, I have the vinyls of. The one which is got such great artwork on the front, there's called How Are You? No, Really, How Are You? That's a great one. And then his other one's called Music for Cats. And if you want to feel just like cool and cultured and just put something on that makes you seem like you've got a little more culture than you do, that's a great one to put on. It's fantastic. So good. Abby, thanks for that. There's so much deep wisdom in children's literature. And I don't want to say that as if I'm surprised or shocked by it, because all of the great wisdom teachers have told us that, man, if you really want to get it, like, have a conversation with a kid. The kind of questions that kids ask are the kind of things that lead to growth. And that's sort of what we want to talk about today, because we've been in this psychedelic summer series, and I put together these definitions on a poster over there, which you can reference afterwards. We've sent that out in the emails a couple of times. The last working definition on here is what we're going to talk about today. It's called openness, and my subtitle for it made me chuckle, which is Keep Your Third Eye Peeled. I don't know if anybody gets that reference there within Middle Eastern, religious tradition or Eastern wisdom tradition. The third eye represents the deepest way of knowing. So that we see with our two eyes. The third eye is the deeper way of seeing that transcends the physical way of seeing. So maybe I only just made myself chuckle with that. It's okay. That happens a lot. Ask Lisa or my daughters. Most of my jokes don't really land on them. Openness. So the definition here that we're working with is this: a posture of curiosity and receptivity toward the unknown. There's a lot of ways I could word that, but that kind of is sort of a good all-encompassing definition for the purposes of what we're doing. And openness ties in with being a kid. And that's why I love that Abby brings us these children's meditations, because children naturally have a curiosity, don't they? When we were kids, we naturally wanted to find out what was behind the door, what's making this happen. We have an unbridled curiosity. Anybody who has kids knows that sometimes that curiosity can be pretty irritating at times. We were all irritating to someone at points in our lives. Openness is the decision to loosen our grip on certainty and to make room for the unfamiliar, the unexpected, and the uncomfortable. So let's start first with a little bit of neuroscience and biology, because I think it's important that these conversations around psychedelic mind-expanding experiences, and not just with substances, but the ways that we can expand ourselves through mindfulness meditation, through spiritual practices, through our reading and other things that we do. These are some very important things, and they're grounded in very real science. As a matter of fact, I've got this one study here that I'm going to be leaving out on the back table here. We offer, Carrie through C3 offers a mindfulness meditation group that meets monthly. And this study says alterations in brain structure and amplitude of low frequency after 8 weeks of mindfulness meditation training in meditation. And it's lots of other study stuff here. But what they found is that just simply 8 weeks of a mindfulness-based meditation practice can have a noticeable effect, a neurological signature on the way that we perceive ourselves in the world. So scientists have studied what happens to the brain during these spiritual experiences or these transformational moments, and we're going to use lots of language for that because there's lots of ways you can talk about it. Some may feel a little more comfortable and familiar, others are going to feel a little more weird and woo-woo. So you have to kind of pick what language works best for you. But we're talking about mystical experiences, unexplained experiences, we're talking about spiritual or psychedelic experiences, and there's a lot of things that fit into that category. And some people include the paranormal in there. And I was reading this past week on Reddit, and I liked what somebody said who describes themselves as a paranormal agnostic, meaning they are not entirely sure, but they remain healthily skeptical about the paranormal. So wherever you fit in these categories, right, there's a type of an openness towards the unknown or the unexplained. And scientists have studied what happens in the brain during people when they're undergoing these transformational experiences. So if you were to kind of do this expression with me here, if you take your hands and just kind of go like this, kind of like you're exasperated with your partner, your kid, or something. So right about one underneath your knuckles, where your knuckles are, is the parietal cortex, okay? So that's the parietal cortex, kind of sits on the top part of your brain, and you can think of it as like a boundary keeper. It is the part of your brain that helps you know where you end and everything else begins. It gives you that sense of that ego identity, that sense of separateness from somebody else. I know that I am me when I look in the mirror. And if I'm standing next to you in the mirror, I can identify that's me, and this is where Brad ends, and this is where John begins. It provides that sense of connection and place in the world. And when people experience deep spiritual moments or mystical experiences, that boundary begins to soften noticeably on the fMRI studies as they study regions of the brain and what parts of the brain lights up, what parts of the brain have activity during these experiences. There's a couple of great books. One I read a number of years ago. I think I have mentioned it in a couple of my book recommendations that have gone out in recent emails. It's called How God Changes Your Brain, Surprising Findings from a Neuroscientist on Spiritual Experiences. And they study everything from Buddhist monks to mindfulness practitioners to charismatic, tongues-speaking Christians. And even within those groups of people who have those charismatic type experiences, the same parts of the brain are being activated, which is the parts of you dissolve that gives you that sense of disconnection from others. So that makes you more prone to be more connected with what's going on around you. So what we said is underneath your knuckles here on the with your hands on top of your head is your parietal lobe. And in there's a smaller region called the inferior parietal lobule. And it's not because it's less important, but because it's smaller. And the IFL, as it's typically called here, is your inner narrator. So if your parietal lobe is what helps provide you with that sense of connection, that is the part of yourself, your IPL, is your inner narrator. It reminds you constantly of who you are, this image you carry of yourself, where you stand, and how to protect your boundaries. And so when you let go of self-judgment and expectation and agenda, the IPL quiets down. So if you've ever experienced that kind of running narration, now this is overly simplistic here. There's lots of regions in the brains that fire to make these experiences happen. But when we're talking about general regions of the brain here, the IPL is doing a lot of this dialogue that says, can you believe they wore that to this? And do I look better than they do? And then you look at yourself in the mirror and you think that you were having a good hair day until you looked at yourself, and then you're obsessing over it. That's all these parts of yourself that is firing up inside your brain that tells you you are a separate self. And we need to protect the boundaries of what makes us us. Some neuroscientists say that our brains are wired naturally for two things: self-maintenance, or keeping ourselves as a human being safe. That is the survival instinct. And they would say that it's self-maintenance and self-transcendence, because Homo sapiens have this unique ability to not just experience reality, but to transcend that experience through contemplation of the future, contemplation of the unknown. It's what helps us grow and connect and transform, is our ability to transcend. We have, as Rod mentioned when he was welcoming us, we are a values-based community, and that means that there are a set of values that help drive why we do what we do as a spiritual community in the world. One of the ones that I love the most is called open inquiry, and that simply says this: we pursue the free exchange of ideas. We explore the lessons of science, of philosophy, and the creative arts, and we undertake independent spiritual journeys. Open inquiry. It's a beautiful value, and it's one that we live out quite well in this community. If you were to just have conversations with people around you, you would encounter stories of others who, perhaps like you, have undergone some significant changes in life. I'm going to just go out on a limb here and take a wild guess that you probably don't believe the same things about God that you believed 25 years ago, right? You have evolved. You've changed. You probably don't believe the same things about the planet and your place in it. Your politics may have changed. Your worldview may have changed. That all happens when we begin to cling less tight to our sense of certainty, and we begin to open ourselves up to new ways of thinking and new ways of being. Open inquiry. Because what you think about in your spirituality matters. This part is kind of an aside, but I think it's so fascinating to work into this talk. That book, How God Changes Your Brain, references some studies that simply the act of contemplating a more benevolent, kind, and loving God, when prompted by a researcher. So they have these study participants and they bring them in. And the study, the researcher gives you a verbal cue to think about something. And then they're studying which parts of your brain regions light up, right? And they ask the participants to contemplate a benevolent, loving, and kind God versus a judgmental or an angry God. And contemplating a loving God more than a punitive God reduced anxiety in the participants, reduced depression and stress over long-term repeat studies, and increased feelings of security, compassion, and love towards their fellow human beings. This shouldn't be shocking. This should be about the greatest duh experiment. But what you think about when you think about God and when you think about your spirituality matters. So taking the time to evaluate not just what you were handed when you came into this world with your set of beliefs, but being able to constantly grow and change, to bring that posture of openness, this healthy receptivity towards the unknown. So what does this look like in the world? And I want to read this description from Byron Katie. This is from A Thousand Names for Joy. And this quote, I think, really, really describes the heart of what I think this open-minded, open-hearted life looks like. She says this, the gentlest thing in the world is an open mind. Since it doesn't believe what it thinks, it is flexible, porous, without opposition, without defense. Nothing has power over it. Nothing can resist it. Even the hardest thing in the world, a closed mind, can't resist the power of openness. Ultimately, the truth flows into it and through it like water through a rock. What openness looks like is the humility to admit that we don't know everything. It's the loosening of the grip that we cling so tightly to in our brains around not only what makes us us, but why we believe what we believe, because so much of our identity is formed around that. It keeps an open-handed and open-hearted posture of curiosity, and it brings that openness into the world. A person who is open recognizes that they don't have to believe everything that they think. Joseph Guyon wrote the book of that same title, Don't Believe Everything You Think. And he says, the thoughts in your minds are not facts. The things that our brain conjures up for us to believe are optional for us to cling to. We think that just because it comes from up here, that it's coming from us, and that we should believe everything that we think. But the open mind, Byron Katie says, is like a rock, porous, and the water flows through it and over it and around it, and it clings to nothing and desires nothing. Openness asks us to let go of our desire for certainty and for explanation. Not that we stop asking the questions, because we bring that healthy curiosity into everything in the world. I will be curious until the day that I die. I love learning new things about nature, about this planet. I love new experiences. I love trying new things. And this openness that we bring into the world invites or prepares us for transformation. The story that I thought of in my past experiences is there have been kind of different books or different speakers or moments along the way that I remember reading something and having what felt like just these little puzzle pieces fall into place. And if anybody's familiar with Michael Singer, he has written a couple of really good books, but his more autobiographical one telling his story is called The Surrender Experiment. And he talks about this concept of aligning our will with the natural unfolding of life. To recognize that life unfolds the way that it unfolds, and that what we experience so much of as our unhappiness and anger and sadness and frustration is our resistance to the unfolding of life as it is. And his idea of this surrender experiment involved observing his thoughts and his emotions without judgment and choosing to accept what is rather than resisting it, to say a big yes to life as it unfolds. So when unexpected circumstances and situations would come across his way, instead of his natural desire to push away the unfamiliar, the unknown. Instead of his natural desire to be skeptical, he leaned in with a posture of curiosity, going with the flow of life instead of trying to fight it or control it. And he wrote this. He said, "My formula for success was very simple. Do whatever's put in front of you with all your heart and soul, without regard for personal results. Do the work as though it was given to you by the universe itself, because it was. Each of us actually believes that things should be the way that we want them." I'm going to say that again. Each of us actually believes that things should be the way that we want them, instead of being the natural result of all the forces of creation. I am so grateful that surrender has taught me to willingly participate in life's dance with a quiet mind and an open heart. This openness to our heart and this openness in our mind is a posture of curiosity, and it's a willingness to say, I don't have it all figured out. And on top of that, I don't need to have it all figured out to participate in the flow of life as it's unfolding. So my invitation for us, because we've tried to take these principles from these psychedelic experiences, and we're trying to break them down in such a way that we can apply them in our lives regardless of where we're at and whether we're experiencing substances or not. These are things that we can all do. This openness in our life of our mind and our heart is a posture that we bring into the world. We talked in pre-talk about how the reality is that not everybody has and brings this same posture of curiosity and openness into the world. You probably know some people who you would describe their minds and their viewpoints as very, very, very closed. Like the door was slammed shut and hammered closed and boarded up. And let's be real. Remaining closed is what we do when we try to protect ourselves, because being open invites us to into some uncomfortable experiences. To change your mind about things that you believe requires a dismantling of viewpoints and opinions and thoughts, and a rebuilding of new thoughts in those place. And that's the viewpoints and the things that we hold up here. To keep this posture and bring it down into our heart invites us to bring an open heart into the world that is filled with a lot of pain and anger and trauma. But love asks us to bring this openness to a world that needs it. And people are more drawn towards those whose hearts are open, whose minds are open and not clinging to the parts of themselves that identify so tightly with the sense of self and other, but recognizes that as those boundaries dissolve, we begin to see a greater picture of connection with others. So I've got a couple of very, very practical things that are helpful to align you with thoughts or actions that trigger a new way of thinking. So one example would be every window or door that you open this week, to choose for that to be a reminder of remaining open in your mind and heart towards new ways of seeing. Okay? You're not going to do it all the way, but after you do it maybe a dozen or more times, it's going to start to connect, and you just do it for the week. Every door that you open, just a reminder, maybe you can come up with a short mantra that encapsulates that for you, of this openness that you bring as a posture in the world instead of being closed. Or, here's another one, whenever you hold an empty cup, an empty glass, an empty mug or water bottle this week, to remind yourself to say that I'm reminded to remain open and receptive. I want the cup of my experience to be open, and I want to be filled with life. Every time you hold an empty cup or an empty glass, that's the second one. And the third one is anytime you see anything in a foreign language, a sign, anything in an instruction label, and an ingredient on your shampoo bottles, anytime you see anything in a foreign language, in a book or a film in a foreign language, to say, I choose to be open to the messages coming to me from other cultures, and to be reminded that your own language and your own culture does not contain the whole of truth and wisdom, that there's so much wisdom to be found elsewhere as well. So these are three very practical ways that you can put this principle of openness into play. One, every time you close a window or door, to say that you are open to new experiences and you want to live open instead of closed. Every time you hold, that's the first one. The second one, anytime you have an empty glass or cup or mug this week, as you hold it, before you fill it up, just spend a minute or a second or two in contemplation of that and choose to remain open and to be filled with what life brings your way, to say yes to life in that sense of surrender. And the third would be to be reminded when you read things from other cultures that the borders of your worldview are bigger than the language and the culture and the people that you came with, that it's so much bigger than that. To allow those to be gateways into transformation for you. If you choose to do that, this is maybe the elementary school teacher that I never got to be, but I love stickers. I have lots of stickers on my laptop and my water bottle. This was a sticker I designed a couple years ago that I just thought was fun. It says, open your mind. I've got some stickers and I've got some magnets that say the same thing. If you choose to do one of those three things this week, come find me afterwards and grab either a sticker or a magnet. This will kind of help trigger that same sense of openness. But this open-minded posture is something that we get to bring into the world. I'm going to read this and then invite our musical guests to come up here and close us out. This comes from Deng Ming, from Tao in Everyday Tao. The valley accomplishes everything while doing nothing but being low and open. By maintaining our modesty and not considering anything beneath us, we can gain everything. By being receptive, we can avail ourselves of the spiritual wealth available to us. By being open, we can receive things beyond what we ourselves might imagine. Namaste.